Sports Ethos.
What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. Today, you guys just have me. It is just I, Candace. Isaac and David have taken just a little bit of a step back from the podcast. They got some things going on in life, so they weren't able to record tonight. We hope to have them back at some point. But in the meantime, you guys just got me. And there is a ton of Grizzlies basketball to talk about. A lot has gone down since you guys last heard from me. So I'm going to try my best to get into it. We got a lot of things to cover. So let's talk some Grizzlies basketball. So I am recording this immediately after the Grizzlies have officially defeated the New York Knicks. They win that game 127 to 123, and we're going to break that game down. But first, I want to take a trip back down memory lane and sort of talk through some of the games and what's happened to this point since we last have talked. Now, there was a game against the Brooklyn Nets, and they played in Brooklyn, and that game was ultimately a loss. The Grizzlies just had too many injuries. It was a game where they decided to rest Jaren Jackson Jr. They didn't have Ja Morant. He just suffered his sprained ankle. He wasn't playing, and they didn't have Desmond Bane, obviously, either, as he's still out. And there's not a lot to talk about. I'm not going to spend a ton of time talking about that game because, well, it just came up to injuries. It was a Dillon Brooks game where Dillon Brooks shot like 30 shots. He got 31 points, but it just wasn't enough at the end of the day for a fully loaded Brooklyn Nets team. And Ben Simmons ended up having a pretty good performance, 22 points against us in that game. And while there were some issues that I felt like could have prevented the loss, I think at the end of the day, it just came down to there was not a closer. There was not a guy who you could automatically go to and get you shots like that in those big moments in a tightly contested type of game. So that's that. But one of the things I do want to talk a little bit more about was the following loss against the Sacramento Kings. I think for me, that was a pivotal moment, in my opinion. And I tweeted this out when it happened, but I think they needed that loss. The Grizzlies lost that game 109 to 113 to the Sacramento Kings, at home. And that was a tough loss, I feel, for a lot of reasons, because I think it could have been avoided. I think it came down to defense, despite the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr. was playing. I think there were still a lot of lapses in defense. And I think they needed to feel that loss. That was a loss where I feel like coaching played a part. I didn't like some of the rotations that ultimately Taylor Jenkins made, especially down the stretch, that like late third, fourth quarter stretch without Ja Morant. Those rotations were just, in my opinion, pretty abysmal. I think one of the things that was a key for me is in the fourth quarter, it's 7 minutes left in the game. Jake Laravia is in the game. He checks Jake Laravia out of the game and replaces him with David Roddy. And it's at that point that I knew that the game was going to be a loss because, you know, generally Taylor Jenkins does a better job of keeping the people who were playing well in the game. Well, Jake Laravia was a plus one in that game, and David Roddy was a negative 16 in that game. And so that decision to me was just an example of just not matching up what I don't think the basketball strategy was there. Maybe it was based off analytics, maybe desired matchups. But either way, I think ultimately that's a big part of why the Grizzlies lost. Conchar wasn't able to step up in that game. He had several key wide open misses. And I think one of the other key things that was a takeaway for me was that Jaren Jackson Jr. was having a phenomenal first half. And the Kings did not have any real answer for him. He was dominating in the paint. He was being aggressive. Affecting the game in both ways on defense, and there just was no answer. Harrison Barnes could do nothing with that man at all, and Keegan Murray for sure couldn't. And in the second half, they just went away from that. Like, they stopped feeding Jaren. He didn't really get the ball much, and it was just a puzzling thing to me because he was so dominant. And he was causing so much trouble for the Kings, for them to not go to him. It's even down the stretch, even when the Kings are sort of giving the game away there at the end. Because there was a lot of opportunities for the Grizzlies to get to take the lead. Really, there were opportunities that were there, but there were so many missed opportunities from a player execution perspective, from a coaching perspective. And I think had they won that game, they would have said, well, you know, we got the win, and maybe they don't reevaluate some of the things that they were doing. Because like I said, I just can't emphasize enough, Taylor Jenkins has always historically gone with a closing lineup who's done well, right? The hot hands. It's sometimes it's matchup based, but it's just with who's played well. Typically the five guys who's played the best on the court, they close. Now, a lot of that is going to be your core, right? But if John Conchar played well that game, then he closes a lot of the times. And that was just a game where it was almost the opposite, where I couldn't understand the logic behind some of those lineups. So anyway, I think the number one, there are trends that I saw in that loss and in the Brooklyn loss. One, wide open threes. The perimeter defense was a struggle in both the Brooklyn Nets game and especially the Sacramento Kings loss. Those two losses, wide open threes, absolutely killed them down the stretch. The inability to make shots on their end, sure, did not help, but they could have done themselves a lot of favors. Down the stretch, I will say they got better about not having as many wide open threes, but the problem is, if you let so many wide open threes happen in the first half of the game, then the guys are in a rhythm. And when you contest them, they just make these wildly contesting shots because they're already in a rhythm. And so I feel like that affected the game, and free throw shooting absolutely affected that game. They shot 63.3% from the free throw line, which was honestly abysmal. It's hard to watch. They were just, how many free throws were missed in that game. And that's been a reoccurring theme. So even though the Grizzlies have now won two games, I will come back to that, but I feel like those two things have carried over as issues. And we'll talk more about that in a minute, but wide open threes, a perimeter defense, and the free throw shooting were keys to losing that game. And really, I'll say almost any loss. I think you could go back to any loss that the Grizzlies have had this season and point to two of those things as being a major factor. So that's definitely a trend that we're seeing from this team that I for sure am concerned about. But the next game after that, the Grizzlies do bounce back. They absolutely needed to win that game at home against the New Orleans Pelicans. It was just critical. I don't care who was playing. I don't care who wasn't playing. But the Western Conference is so tight-knit. And I hear a lot of people talking about how the Grizzlies are only two games back or one and a half games back. And yes, from first place in the West. And yes, that's true. But the thing is you go on a losing streak, you lose two, three games in a row, you can easily find yourself out of the play-in. I mean, in theory, you can find yourself a 12th seed because everybody is two to one and a half games back from first place. And when it's that jumbled up and there's that little separation, you don't have a margin for error. You can't afford a losing streak. And so some people say, well, we're not healthy, they'll get healthy. I don't think it's that simple. I think if you fall out of the West, it's hard to climb it because everybody else is so close together. As long as you need to basically stay in it. You don't have to dominate the West, but you do got to stay afloat. And the Pelicans' win was critical, I think, to the Grizzlies staying afloat. That's all they need to do. Stay in the middle of the pack. If you can manage to stay in the middle of the pack until you get healthy, then the Grizzlies are in absolutely wonderful position to set themselves up to be at the top of the Western Conference and maybe even win the Western Conference, which is definitely still in play, in my opinion. But I think, And this is why I say that the Kings loss was pivotal. I think what made the win, or what resulted in the win the most, was coaching strategy from a basketball perspective by Taylor Jenkins. He had the brilliant decision to put Dylan on Zion, which is something I thought about, but I didn't know if Jenkins would be willing to really be that different. A lot of people assume that Dylan would guard Brandon Ingram, with C.J. McCollum being out, and I will say that plays a factor. C.J. McCollum is a bona fide Hall of Fame Grizz killer, first ballot Hall of Famer Grizz killer. So I think the Grizzlies still win this game even if he plays, but it definitely wouldn't have been a blowout win that it was. But a lot of people assume that Dylan will guard B.I. and that, you know, it would be Jaren versus Zion. But with them putting Zion on, or Dylan on Zion, it put Zion absolutely in check and allowed for Jaren to roam free and really play to his strengths, right? Be that almost free safety who can, you know, play help defense. And he does that so well, and it worked phenomenally. So when Dylan was matched up with Zion, Zion only had 2 points. The guy did not score. Dylan played, I've got to give him his props, he played phenomenally against Zion. And any points he got was when basically he wasn't in the game. Which is pretty incredible to say, because although Zion has been a little up and down this year, I think, trying to find his place, without CJ, I think this would have been a great, it would have been a prime opportunity for him to take more shots and to be more aggressive and to kind of find his offensive rhythm. But he wasn't able to do that thanks to Dylan. And I also think another important coaching decision that swung this game was, it was very early, first few minutes in the first quarter, and Jaren Jackson gets called for a foul. Cool, free throws. And then he gets called for another foul, which is bogus. And it was proven to be bogus because Taylor Jenkins challenged it and he won the challenge. And it may seem simple, but we've seen Taylor Jenkins hold on to challenges like they, like he gets extra bonus checks for holding on to those challenges, right? We've seen him be hesitant to make decisions like that so early in the game. But it was so important that he did that because it kept one of your best defenders in the game. It allowed for Jaren to really impact the defense, to stay on the court, which you absolutely need him staying on the court with Dylan. And then I think it helped Jaren in terms of his mindset. We all know that Jaren can sometimes get in his head when he gets in foul trouble. At least historically, he's had trouble. He can sort of have a bad game if, like, the whistles go against him pretty early. And he's got to sit, it sort of messes up his rhythm, and he's out of his, you know, it just, he didn't really figure out how to overcome those types of things. And so it would have been huge from an emotional perspective, but it would have played right into the hands of the Pelicans early on and given them momentum, even though it was a home game, before the game even really got started. But Taylor Jenkins challenged it. I thought it was a good idea to challenge that because of how critical that moment was. Yes, it's only 2 fouls, but you understand that if it's 2 fouls that early, you've got to sit Jaren Jackson. So they won that and ultimately allowed Jaren to stay on the court, and his impact was felt throughout the longevity of that game. So huge props for Jenkins bouncing back. I thought the rotations were better. There were moments when I felt like, you know, Ja had been out a while, and I'd kind of think to myself, you know, it's time for Ja to come back in. And then there'd be a timeout. Ja would substitute back in. And so there wasn't these long stretches where, there weren't long stretches without Ja, but it wasn't, I think when it was time to put Ja back in the game, he did, versus in Brooklyn or in Kings games or really past games where Ja would need to be back in the game. And it'd be obvious that Ja is needed back in the game, and he'd continue to play the bench lineups as if they're winning when they weren't, when they wouldn't be, and they'd be losing those minutes. And it puts a lot on Ja when he comes back in and then have to play superhero and get the Grizz out of this hole that's really hard to come back from. I know for sure that was an issue in the last Pelicans matchup that they lost, was that Ja came back in, they were down, 12, 13 points? That's a lot to ask, and for even a Ja Morant. And so I saw that was improved, and I gotta give him his props for that. And then that leads us to this game, tonight's game, that I saw a lot of things that I liked from. It was a huge game for Ja Morant for playmaking. He was huge. He had 14 assists, 10 rebounds, 27 points, a triple-double for him. Jaren Jackson had 21 points. Dylan Brooks had 23 points. And it was a back-and-forth game. Now, defensively, the Grizzlies did allow the Knicks to get 123 points. That's a lot of points. And I think there were some breakdowns in communications and defenses, things like that, that could have gone better. But ultimately, Jalen Brunson just got hot, man. He just got hot, especially in that fourth quarter. I think they sort of defended pretty well. And then Jalen just went on a streak. Brunson was, he's just good, man. He really is. And while I don't love seeing the Grizzlies give up this many points, and I think there were some things that could have been done to make this a stronger defensive outing for them, I also think it's not the same type of defensive issues that you've been seeing in the past. Like, wide open threes and rotations were better. The defense was obviously not on a string, and I think Ja Morant could have done a lot better defensively on tonight. But I think really he was putting so much effort in offense trying to facilitate, because he made in a post-game conference that they were throwing a lot of different defenses at him. So I think that affected his defensive performance. But overall, I think rotations were solid. I think most of the shots that were taken were contested. I don't recall going, you know, it just being obvious. There was a, you know, there'd be an open three or two. But even then, you'd have somebody go at least attempt to do a late closeout to try to contest a shot. There wasn't a, you'd see somebody wide open and then you'd see somebody act like they're going to head over and then decide not to. And then, of course, the guy knocks down the wide open three. There wasn't any of that from the bench unit nor the starting unit. And I think that's huge. I think sometimes teams are just going to get hot. And it's the NBA and these guys are talented and they're at home. It's Madison Square Garden. It doesn't surprise me they were able to put up some numbers. It really doesn't. It's just the way it goes. But what it came down to is Ja Morant being Ja and making plays, and Jaren making some shots. He was some really key shots from three. He was 3 from 8 from the 3-point line. So he wasn't particularly efficient from the 3-point line. I mean, it wasn't bad, but he wasn't like just killing it from the 3-point line. But those 3-pointers that he did hit were so timely. They made such a difference. He wasn't able to have the defensive presence that he normally would have. It wasn't a lot of block shots, but I think he was altering shots quite a bit. I do think that he got kind of fooled on a couple of, maybe not fooled is the right words, but he was out of position a lot, so he wasn't able to. There was a lot of drop offs where the Kings would drop it off to a big, and Mitchell Robinson would get a dunk or something like that. That happened a lot. To where Jaren wasn't able to really affect the paint in the way that he normally does. I think that was a result of others around him not doing their jobs or poor communication. But nevertheless, I'm still overall happy with the performance. They got the win. Sometimes you're going to have to win the tough one. You're going to have to win the ones that are hard to win when you're on the road and the other team's hot and it's Madison Square Garden. It's a heck of an atmosphere. I've got no complaints about, I mean, sure, there are things that the team can do better in, namely free throw shooting again. So let's talk about that. Today, the Grizzlies shot 23 of 31 from the free throw line, 74%, which is better than what they've been. But that's a really low bar because the Grizzlies are the worst free throw shooting percentage team in the league. And this is an issue because, well, they have the ability to get to the line so frequently. Like, Jaren Jackson can get to the line a lot more when he wants to now. We've seen that in these first few games. Ja gets to the line a ton. Dylan, he's putting pressure on defenses enough to get him some free throw attempts. And these guys have got to hit them. Now, I will say tonight, Steven Adams got way more free throw attempts than you would normally want Steven Adams taking. There was a lot of issues, especially in that first quarter with he'd get a foul and there would be a lane violation or just something weird. They just kept fouling him. It was almost like a hack a shack in the first quarter, which you never really see, but that's exactly what happened in this game. And so Steven Adams did bring down your percentage. He was able to get 4 of 9, which for him, you know, I'll take it, I guess. I'll take it. It's not great, and I think it did bring down the Grizzlies' percentage. Otherwise, if you take out Steven Adams, the team did a lot better in terms of free throw shooting, but it has been a concern. it just has been. Some of it is Steven Adams, sure, and he has been, because he's being more aggressive offensively than he normally is, he's taking more free throw attempts, and that's affecting their percentage. But there are times when Tyus is missing free throws, or Dylan Brooks is missing free throws, and Ja Morant has been extremely streaky. I think we were wondering early in the year, I remember having conversations with Isaac and David about, is this free throw shooting permanent? Like, will he continue to shoot it like 80%, or was it streaky? And with now, with more games under our belt, we know it was streaky, because he's had games where he's dang near missed all of them, where he's missed clutch free throw opportunities. And he could, I mean, he missed a clutch one tonight. Like, he missed a free throw at the end there, and because of that, it put the game potentially in jeopardy. It ultimately didn't end up being that way, but Jai had a chance to put the game away with free throws tonight, and he just didn't. And we're 20 games into the season, almost basically a quarter way through, and it is a legitimate concern of mine for you to be the worst free throw shooting team in the league is a problem. They've always struggled from three-point line. It's never been a strong point, but these guys have just got to capitalize, like, period. I mean, in the win against the Pelicans, Ja was 50% from the free throw line. Unacceptable, Ja. Like, you can't be that bad at the free throw line. I don't know what Taylor Jenkins has got to do, but he has got to emphasize this, because this team cannot contend if they don't make their free throws. They're not going on a deep playoff run if they can't make free throws. I don't care if they're healthy or not. If the team can't make free throws, it limits their ceiling. Point blank, period. Everybody's like, well, when the Grizzlies get healthy. Yeah, I hear all that. But at the end of the day, healthy or not, the team has to make their free throws. Now, it will help. I hope that Steven Adams will not be playing closing lineups the way he played the closing lineups, particularly in the Sacramento game. That will help because, well, then teams just do hack a shack in the fourth quarter, and it ends up coming back to bite the Grizzlies. But outside of that, they still have to shoot their free throws. Ja, I'm looking at you. You have got to shoot your free throws. It is great. It's so great that he got a triple-double tonight, but it might not have mattered if they would have lost the game because he didn't make that free throw at the end. Like I said, it's cost him games before, and it's got to be something nipped in the bud. And I know they used to do free throw competitions. That was a thing last year. Bring that back times two. Don't be so nice about it. Run laps if you don't make your free throws. But Taylor Jenkins has got to change his approach and be tough on these guys about the free throws, because it's a consistent issue. It's a trend now, and it's definitely problematic. But anyway, that's all the negative. I don't want to talk too much negative because the Grizzlies did get a win here on tonight, and so there's a lot to celebrate. So in lieu of celebrating, or right in line with celebrating, I want to talk about something that I think it must be mentioned. We haven't talked here in a long time, and it's a trend that I'm excited to talk about, and that is the Jaren Jackson Jr. leap. There's been a lot of talk about leaps amongst Grizz Nation, right? There's been the Ja Morant leap that we've seen, what we saw from that from his sophomore year to his third year, and then really we saw a leap, I think, in his three-point shooting. I think maybe it's less of a leap and he's just improved in some areas now that he's sort of kind of cooled down. But we even saw a bit of a leap from him this year in terms of improving his game. There was a defensive leap, I think, that's trailing off now. We saw a leap, like I said, his free throw percentage had increased, his three-point percentage had increased, and his points per game had increased. And so, you know, there was a leap there. Now, it's, like I said, it's cooled down. It's improvement, but I wouldn't say it's a leap. There's been a ton of talk about the Desmond Bane leap, which is an undeniable leap. Increasing his scoring average by another 6 points, being such a key pivotal part of the playmaking, even growing into the Grizzlies closer, even more so than Ja Morant at this point. It's been a huge leap from Desmond Bane. And a lot of people are looking forward to seeing what the Zaire leap will look like once he gets healthy. What will his growth look like? What will we see from him from a playmaking perspective? Will he be able to fill the gap of the Milton minutes? Will he be the future Dylan Brooks replacement? A lot of questions about what his leap will mean for others on the team. But what nobody's really talked about is people talked about Jaren Jackson improvements, but nobody's really talked about the Jaren Jackson Jr. leap. And let me tell you, I think we are seeing a Jaren Jackson Jr. leap. So let's get into the numbers. So why do you say that? I'll just say from a general perspective, what you're seeing right now and why I call it a leap is because Jaren's really starting to put it together. And granted, we're talking about a small sample size here. It's five games. Heck, John Morant was the front runner for MVP in five games. And so things do change. I'll give that caveat, but I'll say this. If this continues, this is absolutely a huge leap for Jaren Jackson Jr. You're seeing the three-point shooting that he had in his sophomore year, the bubble year. You're seeing the efficiency that he had from the two-point line in his rookie year, where he was dominant really in the paint, and he was used a lot in the paint, and you know, not as much from the three-point line. And then you're seeing the defense from his fourth year, that elite defense that he brought to this team last year. You're seeing all of those three things combined in all levels. And it is absolutely beautiful to see. So let's get into the numbers. If you take out Jaren Jackson Jr.'s first game, because I do, like, it was his first game. It was a national TV game at that. He was piss poor from no, and he didn't look like himself. I think he just wanted to get it out of the way. I think even he sort of commented that to him, the most important thing is just to get it out of the way. I don't think that first game was indicative at all of Jaren Jackson or his play. So, if you take out the first game, Jaren Jackson Jr. is 57% from the field, 43.5% from three. He's attempting 6.75 free throw attempts per game. He's shooting them. He's shooting those free throws at an 82% clip. He's averaging six rebounds a game. He is averaging 1.5 steals a game. He's averaging three blocks per game and only three fouls per game. Though it's currently, take out the first game, 22 points per game is his points per game average. That is incredible improvement. So if you don't really know, I know I threw a lot of numbers at you, right? I just see, you know, it's a lot of numbers, right? So let's break down what this really means. Jaren Jackson shooting 57.1% from the field is his best free field goal percentage of his career. And of course, small sample size, I'll give that caveat. But it's his best free throw field goal percentage of the year. His best prior to this was 51% in his rookie year. That's when I referenced where he was really good in the paint. They used him in the paint a lot. Back when he was still playing with Mike Conley, that was a great two-man game that they had going on. And you saw his potential in the paint that year. He showed flashes of what that was. From three-point, he's shooting 43.5% from three, which I don't really have to explain why that's incredible, right? It's, again, small sample size, but that's a great trajectory. I'm sure that'll trail down, but his best three-point percentage was the bubble year, or the year that finished in the bubble, his sophomore year, where he shot 39% from three. Right. So, I mean, that still gives him room to even drop down and still be closer to around where he was that year, which is incredible. That Jaren offensively, everybody really, that's when he was began to be called the unicorn, because his ability to shoot threes and still have that presence in the paint was incredible. Right. Well, we all know Jaren had an incredible year leading the league in blocks last year, both on a per game basis and a total blocks basis. Well, this year, he so far has surpassed that. Last year, he averaged 2.3 blocks per game. Right now, he's averaging 2.75 blocks per game, basically three blocks per game for him, which is an increase. And we all know how impactful he was on defense last year. Again, that might go down some, but that means he's basically maintaining where he was defensively, if not improving in that area. He's averaging the most points per game. That 22 points per game in the last four games, well, his highest career to this point, his highest career average in over a season has been 17.4. And again, we expect that to trend down, but maybe let's say he lands at 19. That's incredible. for him, truly. And then one thing I so want to emphasize is the free throw attempts per game. A lot of people have wanted Jaren to be aggressive and, you know, get involved in the paint more, and they were upset and frustrated with him because he wasn't really doing that. Well, this year, he is averaging 6.75 free throw attempts per game. Well, before that, he was averaging like 4.4 was his high, and that was last year. That was his high in free throw attempts. So that's a huge leap, and you want to continue to see him being aggressive like that. You want to continue seeing him in the paint, because he can dominate. There really is no answer for him. And, you know, he can shoot them efficiently, right? You know, he's got a good free throw percentage. Right now he's averaging, like I said, again, take out that last game, he's averaging 82% from the free throw line. So that's a guy you want shooting those shots, seriously. And one of the most important things for Jaren in his leap is that he's fouling less. Sometimes he gets in a foul trouble, but it doesn't seem to be as occurring of the issue. And I think he's learning how to play through the fouls. Right now, he's averaging 2.8 fouls per game, about three fouls per game. But it was 3.5 last year, 3.8 the year before, 4.1. The year is going down each year. You see progress in that area. So Jaren's biggest criticism is that he fouls too much. He fouls too much so he can't stay on the court. It seems that he's managed to get some of the skill work in. I know when he went down with his injury, one of my concerns and one of a lot of people's concerns was that would Jaren really be able to improve his game in those areas he needed to because he was hurt? Well, it looks like he got enough skill work in before and after his, you know, his injury and his rehab, because the evidence is there. He looks stronger. He's able to absorb contact a lot better. And you see him being more confident in his approach to his game, hence the aggression. As a result of that, you can see nothing was wrong with his ability to lift weights. So that guy is stronger up top. His arms are huge, and he's learning how to play big. He talked about that in a post-game presser. Someone watching Steven Adams and learning from him has taught him how to utilize his body effectively, and you can just see it in his movements. Aside from stats, the eye test very much so lines up with everything I just said. Right, you can see his effort on the offensive glass. That's not a dramatic increase in that from him statistically, but you can see him seeking those opportunities, which to me says a lot about his mindset and his ability to grow in that area for this team. You see his confidence in terms of attacking off of the dribble. When Jaren would attack off of the dribble from the perimeter, from the arc, he'd get turnovers a lot. He wouldn't get comfortable with his footwork. He still needs some work in the footwork department, but he would either turn it over or he'd travel or he just kind of look awkward and uncomfortable. You could tell he didn't really have the confidence to take people off the dribble. He knew he could do it, but especially in certain matchups, he didn't think he could do it well. Well, now he's taking guys off the dribble, and what he's learned to do, I've noticed, all Jaren ever had to do was add one more dribble to gather, to add some power to his shot behind it. But he wouldn't take that dribble, and he'd travel, or he'd turn it over, or he'd do something weird and, you know, mess up the play, or he'd miss the shot, it'd be inefficient. But now he's taking, you either see him taking that extra dribble, or you see him leaping. I think he's learned he's more explosive than he thought he was before. He's made some leaping dunks or some leaping finishes where he just takes that power, explosion, and he is stronger now, and so he can finish through the contact. And you see him doing that as well. And it's made him more efficient. Overall, it's something small like that's made a huge difference for him in his ability to attack people off the dribble, which is important for him because I know a lot of people want to see him in the paint, and I do too, but when he's playing next to Steven Adams, it's hard to have both of those guys in the paint like that, so you need a guy like Jaren to be able to attack people off the dribble where he can be a threat on the perimeter and still attack the paint. Now, do you want to feed him in the post more, get him going? Yes. But like I said, if Steven Adams is out there on the perimeter, well, the defense is going to know that he's not really a threat at that point. And so it can still kind of clog up the paint that way. It really is best that Jaren, who is the threat, helps spread the floor out more, and then he attacks off the dribble. I do think they can work in a better diet, though, especially when he's in with that second unit, making sure they feed him in the paint at that point where he's at the five. When he's at the five, I think it needs to be a bigger priority for sure. But anyway, like I said, he absorbs contact better because you can see he's stronger now. And I think one thing that's noticeable to me is he seems more engaged and more focused. You can always see these Jaren games where he was sort of out of it and not really there. You could tell when he was frustrated and he wore his emotions on his sleeve, but he seems to, and don't get me wrong, he's still going to flare his arms or if he disagrees with a call, but he just seems a little bit more in control. And we'll see. Like I said, early sample size. These games aren't as intense. It's the beginning of the season. Does it get worse when things get more heavy? Maybe. But I just like to see him more engaged. I like to see him just more locked in. Like I said, he's looking for opportunities to rebound. He's looking for opportunities to just impact the game. I see him offering to set screens. Jaws waved him off a couple of times. He's offered to be part of the pick and roll a couple of times. But I like to see that thought from him, looking for ways to help his teammates when he's on the floor. So I think that's pretty much all I've got to say on the Jaren front. I talked a lot about it, but this leap is absolutely huge for the Grizzlies because they have three bona fide all-stars in Jaren Jackson, Desmond Bane, and Ja Morant. Really, I think if they all continued this, it'd be arguable if all of them are in the conversation for all NBA conversations, and that'd be tough, especially for all three of them to get that. But I think they would be in the conversation, whether either first team or second team, because they're just playing at that elite of a level. And that's so exciting to have a core of three all-stars playing together this young, and you see room to grow in all of them. And then there's Dylan, who I will shout out, has been playing well as of late. He's doing great in the catch and shoot role. Dylan's really almost become money as long as he's not creating his own shot, ironically enough. But he's been a huge contributor. You've got a guy who can give you 20 points when you need it, and a guy who, in the small sample size, we have seen defer to Ja Morant and Desmond Bane and Tyus Jones. And I think it's working for him. I think he's learning he can thrive in that role just the same. It will be an adjustment for him when Des does come back, and it'll be interesting to see how that lineup chemistry-wise works itself out. But anyway, there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Grizzlies fan. And I just want to add a few more things, a couple of more things that I've noticed that the Grizzlies fans should be excited about. And that is, I just want to give a quick shout out to Steven Adams. Man, Steven Adams has been an absolute monster as of late. He has had a double-double in three of the last four games. A double-double. Now, I'm sure the rebounds don't surprise you, but the points do. He has been more aggressive. He's been more intentional. You can tell that Coach Jenkins and the team is talking to him about taking more of those chances. That's why he's been at the free throw line more often, because he's been more aggressive offensively. He's rolling hard to the basket, and that impacts the offense dramatically. It makes all the difference in the world. He's averaging 7.8 points per game right now. That's the most he's averaged since he's been with the Thunder. He's also averaging 11 rebounds per game, which is more than he averaged last year by one rebound. So he is being absolutely dominant, and it would be remiss of me not to shout out Steven Adams and his wonderful contributions to this team. I'm curious to see if he goes down in touches or something when Dez gets back. Like I said, I'm just curious as to how the touches and all of that will work healthy. It's so important to get this team healthy because that's so huge. But anyway, shout out Steven Adams. Another shout out to Jake LaRavia, who you might be surprised I'm shouting out Jake LaRavia, but I want to give the rookies some love here. We're seeing progress from both of these rookies in different areas. So from Jake LaRavia, I'll start with him. He has regressed offensively. It's not been a great offensive month for him. In the month of October, he was shooting 60% from the field, 60% from three. Right now, he's shooting like 30% from three. But he is assisting more. Like, he only had 2 assists in the month of October. The whole month of October, he had 2 assists. And he's got 12 in November. So even though his shot is not going down, at this early of an age, he's learning how to play make for his teammates, which is huge and speaks to his maturity and his ability to fit in on his team long term. And then what's I'm most happy to see is his improvement defensively. In the month of October, his defensive rating was 120. And now, in the month of November, it's been 110. And so you see him getting better defensively. I think he's done better about not ball watching so much, not going wherever the ball goes. You can tell he's breaking the habit because he's always kind of like antsy to go where the ball's going, but he's done a better job of staying a little bit more attached to his man on the outside. And I think that's been a big part of not seeing as many wide open threes in these past couple of games. You see him not doing that so much. And I'm going to show the most love to David Roddy. David Roddy, who has taken a bunch of crap from the fan base. A lot of people been upset with David Roddy, and understandably, because he is, quite frankly, been playing piss poor. He really has. Like, he had not been playing well. He's one of the worst rotation players in the league. But doesn't that sound familiar? Like, wasn't a Zaire Williams kind of one of the worst rotational players in the league? And yeah, the facts show that about David Roddy as well. But we're seeing some of the same improvement that we saw from Roddy, that we saw from Zaire, with David Roddy on both ends of the floor. So in the last 4 games, David Roddy has shot 39% from the 3-point line. Yeah, you like that? He's at 39% from the floor, where he was shooting 37% from the floor. That's not great. You'd love to see that get up more, but it is progress, right? He's shooting 100% from the free throw line in the last 4 games. He's also got 2.25 rebounds that he's averaging per game. And he's had 2 games in a row where he's not been a negative on the floor. Both of these wins, he was not a negative on the floor, which may sound insignificant, but David Roddy has been consistently like double-digit negative, negative 15, negative 16 after every game. But against the Pelicans, he was a 0, a net neutral, which is huge because he spent some time guarding Zion. So for him to still come up net neutral means he held his own. And he has a plus 6 tonight against the Knicks, which you love to see. He was really giving the Grizzlies meaningful minutes on defense. I was super proud to see him holding his own and doing so well and knocking down shots the way he was. His October-November numbers are vastly improved. In the month of October, he was shooting 28% from the field. I'm sure you failed every bit of that 25% because the shots were not going down for Roddy. Well, this month, in the month of November, he is shooting 43% from the field. That's a huge difference. That's like plus, right? And he's only going to get better. His 3-point percentage in October was literally 16%. Like, honestly, I didn't think you'd see improvement on that anytime soon because it was that bad. But already, in just a month, his 3-point percentage is now 35% from the 3, which is better than, honestly, some of the teammates. And probably comparable to a Tyus Jones or something at this point. Like, he's really giving you minutes there. He seems to have mastered the catch and shoot. Well, that's all this team needs for him to do is catch and shoot. And it's interesting with Roddy because I think I see them molding him to be sort of the Dylan Brooks role off of the bench, where he's going to, you know, play good point of attack defense against the best player who's on the floor at that time, and he's going to catch and shoot threes. What they want Dylan to be, I'll say, right? They're not really looking. They used to look for Dylan to create his own shot. I don't think they want that from him anymore because they wanted Desmond to take over with that, so that David Roddy, his job is to knock down the open three to, you know, create his own shot when needed, right? He can take you off the dribble and get in the paint. He can do that. He does need to learn how to finish through contact at his size. That's a concern, but I think he'll get the hang of that eventually, right? He just got to figure out how to do it, like I said, with his size. He's a little undersized, so he's got to get the techniques down. And he'll probably get stronger, right, in order to do that too. But defensively, you see him improving as well. In the month of October, he too had a defensive rating of 120. And now he's got a defensive rating of 113. Not as good as a defender as Jakey is right now, but I think I would argue he's guarding the much tougher assignments. And so when you take that on, I think he's got great promise as a point of attack defender. He's still got a lot of room for improvement with those defensive rotations. But I see even him doing a little bit better and not ball watching as much and not getting as confused. He still gets confused on defensive rotations, but not as much as he used to. So you love to see that progress from the rookies. I don't think these rookies will ultimately get a lot of minutes when the team gets healthy, if the team ever gets healthy. And so these minutes are valuable. I think they probably will play Roddy, because I really think they want Roddy to be the new Dylan. They'll probably prioritize his minutes over Jake LaRavia at this point. I'm not sure I agree with that decision, but I think that's where they're going with it. And I'm beginning to see why and what they're trying to do with David Roddy. Even though he's been a negative on the floor, they know they need another point of attack defender, and they can groom him to do that with Dylan taking on the bulk of those minutes and David Roddy taking those spot minutes when Dylan's off the bench. So, and that makes perfect sense to me. But anyway, I think these minutes are huge. I don't think these are guys you can depend on in the playoffs, or that you should depend on in the playoffs. But I think that they will give the Grizzlies a lot of depth in the long term. Right now, I don't think they're functional depth. I think they're long-term depth pieces. And we'll see the results and the fruits of that either at the end of the year, if at all, or, you know, next year. Next year is more than likely where I see that really coming to pass. But anyway, guys, that's all I've got time for today. Be sure to follow the show at Ethos Grizzlies. You can follow me on Twitter at CandiceH901. That's CandiceH901. Be sure to follow my guy Isaac at Isaac_NBA. And be sure to follow David at NBADWheel21. So we appreciate you guys listening to the show. We would love to hear your feedback. Give us a like if you or give us a review if you're listening on iTunes. We hope to be here back. We'll do some post games ever so often. I won't be able to do one every night, but I'll try to get in every couple of games. Give you guys a breakdown of what that game looked like. That's it, guys. That's all the time we got for tonight. We gone.